This episode of the Braving Business Podcast is sponsored by, well, me. I'm PJ Benoit, and I've been in the domestic and international logistics space for over 30 years. If you need any assistance with transportation or logistics, my team and I will jump at the chance to help. Whether it be parcel shipments, e-commerce, pallets and freight, full truckload, international air and ocean, imports, exports, warehousing and distribution, or really anything under the logistics umbrella, we got you covered. For more details, please go to shipwithpj.com. That's shipwithpj.com. Reach out to me there. Mention you found me on this podcast for a special surprise. And one last quick thing. If you enjoyed this episode, please stay on after the show to learn more about the Braving Business Podcast and other great episodes for you to discover. And now, let's get the show started. Well, hello there.
How's it going?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Man, I'm great. I'm great. It's good to see you.
It's good seeing you too. I understand that you were in my beautiful city of Chicago recently.
Yeah, we did a show over the weekend in Andersonville.
Oh, nice.
And I got to tell you, we did another show at the end of April, and it was a 3-day show, and it was bananas. We sold a ton of product. And this show in Andersonville last weekend was a 2-day show. And so just out of like an abundance of caution, I brought 100% of what we sold a few weeks ago at the 3-day show for this 2-day show. And we sold out of all of it on the first day and had like nothing to sell. And so it was a absolutely ridiculous show. Folks in Chicago, like you, have just been so great to us. And so it felt good to be back.
Well, hey, that's a good problem to have if you're selling out in the first day. So it just goes to testament of what kind of fantastic product you have. So if you don't mind, I'm going to intro you, and then I know you, but other people don't. So let's have this intro here. So folks, today on the Braving Business Podcast, we have the fabulous Mr. Walter Kinsey, a visionary entrepreneur whose dynamic journey embodies resilience and creativity, hallmarks of authentic leadership. Walter is the founder of Kinsey Foods, a company dedicated to transforming everyday meals into extraordinary experiences with bold, memorable flavors. But before he ventured into the culinary world, Walter left an indelible mark on the live entertainment industry as the founder of Encore Holdings. There, he orchestrated world-class events with legends like Bon Jovi, Metallica, and Garth Brooks, showcasing his talent for crafting unforgettable experiences. So Walter's entrepreneurial path began with a profound personal challenge, overcoming a life-threatening kidney transplant just at 18 years old. This experience instilled in him an unyielding work ethic and a deep appreciation for the power of perseverance. And when COVID-19 pandemic brought live events industry to a complete halt, Walter did not back down. Instead, he reimagined live entertainment, launching the Encore Drive-In Nights concert series. This innovation not only kept his business afloat, but also brought much-needed joy to millions during a challenging time. And I'll share a quick story about that with you afterwards. Now with Kinsey Foods, Walter is channeling his passion for connection through food, inspired by his belief that storytelling and authentic experiences are at the heart of successful brands. His journey is a testament to the power of resilience and the ability to pivot with purpose, making Walter Kinsey an inspiring figure, both in business and in the culinary world. Walter, welcome.
You are way too kind, and I really, really appreciate that, and I'm happy to be here.
Oh, no worries, man, no worries. So let's just start with your entrepreneurial roots. So at the tender age of 7, you took out your first business loan to start a cattle ranch. I can only imagine these were the calves, not the actual big old cattle. But can you share what drove you at such a young age and what that experience taught you about business?
Well, I was in an entrepreneurial home. My dad had a couple different small businesses and was just always working. My mom was a workaholic as well. Out of necessity and just they're hardworking folks. And so, I took out my first business loan. It was a gradual progression. And so my first loan was for $125. You can't even do that these days. I bought a pig with it. A pig turned into, within a couple of years, it was a couple of pigs. That turned into cattle, and it started with one, and then it grew and grew. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I'd taken out at least one business loan a year, and I'd grown what started out when I was seven as one pig into an operation on my grandfather's farm that I don't remember the exact head count, but it was 20 or 30 head of cattle. I was routinely marketing them around the country and just learned a whole lot of business. I think just worth noting that I had a banker that was, obviously gave me a loan at seven, but he looked at that opportunity and said, let's make something out of this. And so I had to meet with my banker once a quarter. My dad was my co-signer on the loan. And so I had to meet with my dad and my banker once a quarter and talk about my business, and, which really amounted to showing my balance checkbook and discussing, what my expenses were for that quarter. But I had real accountability there, even at that very young age. And and it's insane. Like, the basic business practices I started to learn when I was seven are the same things that I'm doing, at 42, operating a couple different companies in entertainment and in consumer packaged products.
That is amazing. All right. So first of all, I was going to dig into that a little bit, and you brought it up. This was not like a loan from your father or some family member or family friend. This is actually from an institution. You went to a bank and got a loan when you were seven?
That's right. Community National Bank in Edna, Kansas. Dave Jones was my banker. We're still friends to this day. He's retired. Through 4-H and FFA, at that time, what wasn't unusual was the bank to loan someone my age money to go buy a head of livestock to then show at the county fair, to then sell at the county fair. What wasn't unusual was for the banker to expect that kid to come in and discuss the business and show a balance checkbook, which is a P&L statement intents and purposes. But what I think I've learned since then was, while that might have happened with dozens of kids a year within our community, it wasn't like dozens of kids a year took it as seriously as I did. And not a knock on them, we just had different interests. And I was interested in the business side of it, not just the fun side of it. And so there was a hefty amount of BS involved and plenty of like, oh crap, I got to meet with my banker tomorrow. I better get this stuff in order.
I better go ride my bike to my friend's house and my paper
route. So it sounds kind of crazier. And I think the laws today wouldn't even allow that to happen anymore. But back then, it certainly wasn't overly unusual, but it also, there were unusual aspects of it. And I attribute those unusual things to my success today.
That's actually super interesting. And I did not know that you could I'm older than you, and I didn't even know back in the old days you could do that. Otherwise, I guess I would have done it. Super cool. Also, it's kind of a testament to something that I truly believe is, and that is no one is powerful without others giving them power. And that stands for that, that could be power in regards to social circles, but also it just means in entrepreneurialism and in bettering yourself. And a lot of times mentors, just like this gentleman was, this banker, mentors are so important to people on their entrepreneurial journey. You were very lucky in that you got them super young, and you were able to take those lessons throughout your life, which is fantastic. Mentorship is such an important thing in entrepreneurialism. And if you're listening now and you don't have a mentor, go find one. There are plenty of people out there. And really look at successful people and just ask. Because a lot of times they'll give you a couple of minutes to share a very direct and honest story or a viewpoint, because everyone starts at the bottom. And so we just got to help each other along the way. And I think that's amazing. Very cool.
A friend of mine wrote a book called The 40-40 Principle. His name's Andy Christensen out of Atlanta. If you want a simple, great business read, I highly recommend the book. It is, it's a very simple concept. If you are under the age of 40, you need to find a mentor or a handful of mentors over the age of 40. Mm. You are over the age of 40, you need to find a handful of mentors under the age of 40. And it sounds weird and it sounds in reverse, but I'm actually talking to a young lady later today who is, you know, light years ahead of me on being effective on social media.
Oh, yeah.
And so she might be in her early 20s, but I'm definitely going to lean in on her. And she's going to be a mentor of mine on how to scale my business through social media. And so kind of a reverse thinking, but it's something. And I certainly, you know, being over 40, I still have plenty of mentors that are older than me. And that concept will never go away. But I am leaning into this like, hey, I need to surround myself with a handful of folks under the age of 40 that really understand aspects of business that I don't.
No, that's awesome.
And I'm doing that now.
That's amazing. And also, like, you know, if you're not learning and you're not expanding, then you're basically just stalling. So got to keep that momentum going. So, you know, you get to 20, 30 head of cattle, you got all these pigs, you are basically Hormel at this point.
Yeah.
And then your journey took a significant turn at 18 when you had this life-threatening condition that ended up with a kidney transplant. How did that experience shape your perspective on life and funnel or drive that entrepreneurial spirit?
Yeah, I think, listen, there's a couple different things there. I realized at 18, I had been living with an ailment or a condition my whole life that manifested for me as just the way I felt every day. So I didn't know any different. I thought that's what normal felt like. And, you know, I would say it was less a life-threatening situation as it was more of a total life, quality of life situation. My life was going to be infinitely more painful and exhausting and miserable if I did not, you know, get it taken care of. Cool. And so anyway, there was a really interesting thing that happened in that moment where I was kind of humbled by what was going on. First of all, everything I'd worked for up until that point helped make a recovery and that journey possible, i.e. I sold a lot of cattle to pay for the medical situation that I was in.
Amazing.
And so, you know, I think God had his hands over that whole thing.
For sure.
I met kids, you know, I was in a pediatric situation.
And what?
So I was constantly was in a pediatric ward or section of hospitals. I met kids in, were you about to say something?
No, it's okay. What was the condition? What did you have?
Called loin pain hematuria syndrome, where basically my body was allergic to my kidneys. And I had some other weird things that contributed to it, but essentially I was just in an extraordinary amount of pain all the time without even realizing it, because that's just the way I felt my whole life. And they had to go in and rework some of the nerves and just some of the functionality of it to make that pain go away. And so it was a really rare condition. It was a really rare situation. The Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, ultimately was the one that found the solution that took care of it. It was a 3-year journey to get there. But I'll tell you, you know, it was in that 3-year journey that I met kids that truly were terminal. And in fact, you know, those kids I met aren't with us anymore. And there was one kid that I met named Corey, and he was just a really, really good kid. And he was from my area. His family was in a similar financial position that my family was in. We both, you know, were kind of up against a really, really tough financial situation. He was truly terminal. And he truly was not going to last that much longer. And, you know, when you're faced with that mortality, things become, you know, perspective is definitely applied. He had simple goals. He wanted to go to prom. He wanted to know what it was like to graduate high school. He wanted to know what it was like to graduate or to be a college student. And he was a couple years younger than me. And so it was being in that situation where I also felt inspired by another passion of mine, which was to put on concerts for a living. I told my dad, also at seven, that my ultimate goal was to put on concerts for a living. And I looked at Corey's situation, and there was a lot of people in the community who wanted to help. And there was this familiar thing that was happening with Corey, which was coffee cans with a little slit cut out of the hood of it were sitting next to cash registers at gas stations all around our county. And folks were putting, you know, they were helping Corey one penny at a time. The reality, though, was Corey didn't need pennies. He needed dollars, and he needed a lot of them. If he was going to get those three goals in life, he needed a lot of money in a short amount of time to prolong his life long enough to hit those three goals. And so I rallied some folks in our community. We figured out what he needed. And we realized we weren't going to get there with coffee cans. And so I looked at this other passion of mine and said, how can we amplify this message as loud as possible beyond the borders of our county and let people in rural Kansas, rural Missouri, rural Oklahoma really hear about Corey and what was going on? And the vessel of a concert solved that. And just as God kind of had his hands in everything that happened to me on my medical journey, he certainly had his hands wrapped around this thing. There were plenty of things that could have derailed it and lots of obstacles that we had to overcome. But ultimately, we needed to raise $70,000 for Corey. And that night, we raised $71,000 for Corey. And it felt good to hit that goal. But there was also, I was driving home that night, and I had this thought in my head that has really driven me in the now 23 years since that concert. And that thought was, what if I had set a goal to raise $250,000? What if I had set a goal to raise $500,000? I firmly believe we would have hit it. We set a goal to raise $70,000, and we got just across the finish line, and the work was done. And we're like, all right, we're done here. And I decided in that moment, that night, driving home from that concert, as proud as I was, I decided I was no longer ever going to put a limit to what was possible. And if I could dream it, it could be done. And I have watched that mindset play out for me over and over and over again. And I've achieved things that seemed ridiculous and seemed absolutely unattainable. And like, you know, what is a farm kid from rural Kansas doing producing a presidential inauguration in Washington, D.C. that hundreds of millions of people around the world watched? But yet I did it. And I set that goal for myself in 2012. And I'll be damned if the very next presidential inauguration I was the producer of. And so anyway, it's happened over and over again.
That is nuts. How old were you when you did this first concert for Corey?
I was 20 years old.
Gee. And who was the headliner that you got on, or was there, you know, a main act?
Yeah, there was. There were four entertainers. It was David Lee Murphy, Jeff Carson, The Great Divide, and then there was Julie Model. I think I got her name right. She was a local celebrity. She was a DJ on a radio station. I hope I didn't butcher her name because she was so helpful in all of this. But 22 years is a long time to remember stuff. But yeah, we had David Lee Murphy, Jeff Carson, The Great Divide.
That's kick ass. How many people went?
Ooh, I want to say we had probably 1,000 or 1,600 people in the audience. And like, we set it up in a rodeo arena. I had like a legit stage. We had all of this. So we're in this rodeo arena, which is dirt. And 24 hours before the show, we got like 4 inches of rain. And everything, which 4 inches of rain in a dirt field turns into 12 inches of mud.
Yep.
And that was very much it. Like, there was absolutely no reason why we should have had it. The sun came out the next morning, the day of the show, and we, you know, worked through the mud, through the chaos, told the crowd, this show's going on, the sun shined for us all day long. We got all the bands loaded in. We got everything set up. And right as the first concert happened, another thunderstorm rolled in. And it rained on us all night long. And, and we had literally like electrical guitars outside in the rain don't mix. Mm. And And so it was this really kind of beautiful evening where we did get to do some full band stuff. Some of it didn't work. You know, David Lee Murphy ultimately sat on a little bar stool with his guitar, no band, no lights, no nothing. Aww. and played acoustic for the whole, you know, it was just a beautiful evening. No one asked for a refund, you know, even though they didn't get what they paid for. It was a beautiful
incredible evening. That, no, seriously, that's incredible. It's just a couple of things. A, it shows what focused mindset can do for you. Right.
That's right.
Just really, you know, to take a coined phrase, keep your eye on the prize, right? Like just really don't lose that goal in mind, which is amazing. And another thing that popped in my head when you're talking about this whole journey and everything was that, I just heard this recently and it resonated very, very well. Cause my wife just went through cancer, which was, we always have a million problems every day, but when your health is in crisis, you have one problem.
That's right.
And, you know, once you, if you're unfortunate and you have a health situation that's taking up all of your bandwidth, there's nothing more important than making sure that that gets taken care of. And, for those who are on a journey like that, I just watched my wife, you know, did everything that I could, but really I'm just a bystander, with her own breast cancer journey, and thankfully, knock on wood, everything came out okay. But it is an all encompassing, terrible, very fearful time for anyone to go through anything, whether it's terminal or even life changing, or just like you, even though you didn't know any better, living every day with pain. It's just a testament to your stick-to-itiveness and to the perseverance that you need to show. So I think that's just, my hat's off to you, even though I'm still wearing it because I got a headset on, but my hat's off to you. And I think that's amazing.
Thank you.
Of course. So then let's fast forward. You're in this music. Let's start some concerts vein. Like you're living your dream and COVID happens. And then you start Encore Holdings and you ended up producing like these world-class events with Bon Jovi and Metallica. Tell them I said hi. What was one of the most memorable events that you organized, and what did it teach you about creating impactful experiences?
Yeah. So, you know, prior to COVID hitting, I'd done some really, really big shows, and I was very fortunate for the stuff I got to work on. And I was like, all of my heroes I was working with, it was really, really incredible. We always took those interactions incredibly serious. Like we wanted them to be meaningful, you know, with the goal that, you know, one day I might need that artist in concert again. And I want them to be, you know, excited to pick up that phone call. I could have never envisioned it would be in what it was. COVID hit, our world came crashing down. I made the decision to keep most of the company intact, leadership team, you know, when it first hit, thought was we'll be out of this in 2 weeks and then maybe a month. And I was watching the entire industry lay off everybody that worked for them. And I wanted to have my team intact as kind of a competitive advantage. If we were intact when everything opened back up, then maybe we could get our foot in the door. And then it started lasting longer. And we didn't know when we were going to open up again. And I remember I told my wife in the middle of May 2020, I'm like, I just got to go for a road trip. I got to clear my head. I got to, you know, this toll is exhausting. I'm spending a ton of money to keep my leadership team intact with no revenue. And not to mention, not only no revenue, but all the projects we were working on and had invested real time, real money, real stuff into, you know, as COVID hit, those bills weren't getting paid. And so we had spent a bunch of cash, and anyway, it was a very frustrating thing. What mattered in that moment was the way I took care of artists. Because when I did have an idea about how I could bring people together while they could stay in quarantine and create a very harmonious experience for these people, I needed people to trust me that I, you know, for an artist to say yes to one of these gigs, and then if they're super spreader events or if they're whatever, like, you know, it could end up doing more harm for them than any good we were trying to achieve in that moment.
Absolutely.
And so, but all of that work we did prior to COVID hitting to show the artists how serious we were, how all the extra miles we will take to ensure it's a good event, no stone is left unturned, paid dividends for us, because the first phone call I made was to Garth Brooks. And I said, I got this idea. I think it could be really big. I just need someone of your caliber to poke holes in this for me. And, you know, an hour of us going back and forth about everything that could go wrong, everything that could go right. He just says to me, he said, hey, if you're going to do this, you need the right person to partner with you. And I'd love to be a part of this. Let me be your first. And from the day I had the idea to when Garth Brooks went on Good Morning America to announce the idea was 13 days. Oh. 6 days after that, we put tickets on sale, and 8 days after we put tickets on sale, 400,000 Americans and Canadians were staying in quarantine with the people they were in quarantine with, in their cars, but out of their house, and doing something that felt very familiar to them, different but familiar, and they were at a concert. And it was across 5 or 6 different time zones. And when we announced that deal, all of a sudden the phone started ringing. And the next one was with Blake Shelton. And the one after that was Metallica. And the one after that, and then what felt really great in those moments was I was also watching bands, you know, that also had all of this stuff ripped away from them. And listen, our problems were different. People lost loved ones. People, you know, COVID was insane. We didn't deal with that. We just dealt with our businesses getting completely shuttered. And so it was just kind of a remarkable experience. And by the end of that first summer, I don't remember how many millions of people had got to go to a concert. And, you know, our first venue, our first show, I think we had like 230 venues. By the last one of those that we did, we had like 10,000 venues across 36 or 71 countries around the world. And you know, a simple show was bringing millions and millions of people together. And for these artists that we're working with, they were the most attended concerts that they had ever done before. But it was just different, you know? And so it was, records were being broke. And I've got this little placard behind me that in 2020 alone, 17 billion impressions across the world of people. You know, we had 8 billion people, and we had 17 billion times people viewed what we were doing. And holy so crap. The amount of joy and happiness we created in a period of time that was marked with just all of this chaos and uncertainty and heartbreak and loss. You know, I'm really grateful that I got to have a small part in that journey.
That is so freaking cool. That is so cool. So these were like live streamed. Like this was obviously like he's
Garth was right by his ranch in Tennessee in a sound stage. Blake Shelton was in a soundstage in Nashville. Metallica actually did their show from a vineyard in Napa. And so it was a full Metallica production, but there was no surface to the stage. So they were literally on this dirt road in this vineyard with like all the rolling hills and the sunset behind them, kicking up dust.
Oh my
so
God.
Full energy of a Metallica show on a dirt road. It was so cool. Bon Jovi did his show from this little theater right by his hometown in New Jersey. And it was the Paramount Theater, just this really iconic venue on the Jersey Shore that was just really, really cool. So, you know, every artist kind of had a lot of say in what journey they took their fans on. And, you know, we ended up doing just kind of these really, really cool productions. Alabama, we literally were on the lead singer's Hereford Ranch in the middle of the ranch in their hometown of Fort Payne, Alabama. And so it was really, really special. Toby Keith, you know, we had no idea to know this, but we did Toby's show. And then just a few weeks later, he was diagnosed with stomach cancer. Oh. And so he shut down his whole operation to fight that. Ultimately, when he realized what was coming, he ended up doing a couple more shows, but it was like his last show he did healthy. And and we had obviously no way to know that was going to be the case. And, you know, he's no longer with us now. And And so, you know, and now on top of that, you think about the time that the time capsule that this will be, you know, his family will get to enjoy this full-length concert of their dad, husband, you know, father in his healthy state for the last time, you know, and it's the a band member from Alabama died right after our show. And, you know, it was one of the last times that the band was together in its, you know, entirety. And so we didn't know that we were capturing these moments in history, but they will live on, and it'll be something for generations, for their fans to continue. You know, Toby Keith is as big or a bigger star than he ever was, you know, and he's been gone a couple of years now.
Yeah, so,
you know, these moments will live on for generations, and I'm grateful for that moment as well.
Yeah, first of all, so cool, so incredibly cool. And I remember hearing about these concerts during that time. My wife and I are kind of like severe concert goers. We go to concerts all the time. We go to several concerts a year at least. And during COVID, we were just going nuts, right? Like I would have paid money to see, you know, some guy play spoons on the corner. Like it was a terrible desert to be in. And we remember hearing these, and I believe I saw the Bon Jovi one. And yep. Because, you know, living on a prayer, right? Like that was,
that's right.
That's what we were all doing at that time. And I don't know if you had any part of this, but, there was a drive-in concert that happened in Chicago, with Fits and the Tantrums.
Yeah.
And were you a part of that?
I wasn't a part of it, but there were a lot of those that happened that kind of were inspired by the work I was doing. And so I was really, really proud to see that. Like, you know, for me, it was much, and this was kind of the first call I had with Garth about it, was it's as much a gift to the world as it is anything else. And to see the number of those that it inspired. And it wasn't just here at home. Like, we started watching all of these pop-up shows happening in across Europe and Africa and South America that, you know, where they got the inspiration, who knows? I like to think maybe we had a hand in it, but that the measurable amount of joy that was created off of this one little road trip I took in the middle of May, 2020, you know, you can't measure. And then, you know, since then we've had letters written to us and, hey, I ended up meeting my wife, or, you know, hey, we got out, we cut loose a little bit. Now here's our newborn baby. And, you know, we heard plenty of those stories too, which brought us a lot of joy as well, that people searching for this moment or to have this moment to kind of get out of the chaos and be free for a minute was
such a gift.
I'd be grateful for those moments forever.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, when we went to go see Fits in a Tantrum, you had to sit in your car but it was such a gift because like the opening band was so excited to be on stage, but clearly they hadn't played in front of a crowd for a long time. So there was all kinds of mishaps happening, which was the beauty of live music, right? Like it's just one of those super memorable things that you can say, hey, I was there and I saw this. And that was, it was just so much fun. It was so much fun.
Well, and what a lot of people probably don't realize is behind the scenes, you know, we were doing this where everybody could stay in quarantine to watch the show.
Sure.
But we also had to keep everybody safe that was putting on the show. And so those were hurdles that we had to jump through early on, like, you know, we're used to building a stage and everybody just kind of being in the work together. We couldn't do that. Like we had to keep people separated, keep people safe, constant testing. And so the amount of work that went into just being able to do the work, we were inventing processes on the fly in real time, in rushed circumstances that had never been created before. And so it does not surprise me one bit about the mishaps that you were talking about, because all of us were just having to figure it out and keep everybody safe, you know, because that, what good does it do to bring millions of people together for a show if an entire band gets sick or you lose somebody and the treatments weren't available yet to help adequately take care of people. And, you know, then you end up doing more harm than good.
Yeah,
and so there was a lot to it.
So cool. So, all right. So let's transition. I mean, like you've championed that, you've created a lot of love in the world and smiles and happiness, which is amazing. But you've transitioned from creating live music entertainment experiences to crafting with your own hands these bold barbecue sauces with Kinze Foods. So do you see, like, is it a complete disconnect? Like, you know, is it a completely different world for you? Or do you see a connection between what you're doing with live music as, and then what you're doing now with your sauces?
Completely connected, although I'm learning new things and flexing brain muscles I never knew I needed to flex. And so here's the thing. At the end of the day, prior to launching this food product, my job was to bring people together and to help them really enjoy the experience of being together. And that's what I'm doing here. You know, together looks different now. Where we were at a concert table, a concert hall before, now we're at a dinner table. Now we're in a backyard barbecue. But at the end of the day, I'm still creating joy and allowing people to savor the moment in a different way. So I really like it. And you know, not to mention that prior to launching this, food was a major component of my job anyway. Like whether it's backstage catering or concession stands out front or a meal for a group of attendees, food was always a cornerstone of what I was working on anyway. That work is ultimately what led to this. As I started to introduce this little family recipe into the work I was doing backstage, the work I was doing with the crowds, I started introducing this product that I had no intention of starting the business. I had no intention of doing this at all. Frankly, it felt like it was too cumbersome of a business to even try to launch anyway. And it was only after it organically grew, the request kept and mounting and growing and growing and growing. And finally, you know, and repeated attempts to shut it down. Like, you know, my whole pricing strategy that I have today comes from the fact that number one, it's expensive to do this. And number two, I was trying to convince people not to buy the product and it didn't work. And so, you know, so, and I did an ounce of research, probably could have done more, but I realized that it's not impossible to go up against Kraft. It's not impossible to go up against McCormick. It's not impossible to go up against Heinz and Hunt's and all of these really popular brands that are at dinner tables every day, every house. It felt like it was this impossible task. It's a very expensive journey, and I am learning that and dumping a ton of money into this. But it's a rewarding one. And it's not impossible to compete, and we're finding a lot of success there.
Yeah. So when you say you had a pricing strategy to keep people from buying the product, are you saying that you priced it high?
I did. I priced it high, and it came from one trip to Walmart and one conversation with a friend. And so I went to Walmart, and I was like, "Damn it! Like every bottle of barbecue sauce is anywhere from $2.25 to $3.99. I couldn't make a jar of this stuff for anywhere close to that. And I was talking to a buddy about it, literally driving home. And I was just like, you know, there's no opportunity for me to do this and be successful. I'm going to set a price at this that number one, makes it worth my time. Number two, covers my cost. And number three, frankly, should deter people from doing this. And he was like, "You're going to be surprised." He was like, "You got to do it for number one and number two, but I guarantee you, number three is not going to be an issue for you." Correct. And I was like, "There's no way. There's absolutely no way people are going to spend this much money." And 600 orders within the first couple of weeks later, I was like, "Okay, you know, people do appreciate quality. They do appreciate small bags. They do appreciate the love and care that goes into this. And frankly, the uniqueness. I'm not trying to be anybody else, and my flavors reflect that.
Yeah,
like I don't have typical flavors of barbecue sauce. And there's similarities delicious. With a couple of the flavors, but most of my stuff is so completely different than anything else out there. You know, that by itself is an example of my personality.
I just made some slow cooked chicken tacos with your pickle, the pickle on.
Yep.
Pretty damn delicious. You're making me look like a chef.
Thank you.
But also that pricing strategy is super important, right? You don't know this, but back in my day, way back in the day, I used to own a custom made blue jean company, and I'd come out and I'd created these blue jeans, and I was making perfectly great profit margin. And I was like, you know what? I want to make these accessible to everyone. Everyone should be able to feel good in their jeans. I was evangelizing this quite a bit. And so I had a price point of $89 delivered. Right. And I'm like, okay, you know, cause I didn't want to like, keep people from buying it. Right. If you weren't in the upper middle class, but you're in a lower middle class, I still wanted you to be able to at least get a garment that really fits you the way it should fit, look the way that you want it to look and that you felt proud wearing it. So I wanted to give that to people, that sense of confidence and joy myself.
Yep.
And then I talked to a friend of mine who actually was a fashion consultant, and she was like, you have to raise the price. And I was like, no, right? I'm not going to raise the price. I'm trying to make this accessible for a lot more people. And she said, no, you need to raise the price because people pay what they feel has quality. And if you go too low, then people are just going to assume the quality is not there. It's just a pricing play, basically. So I raised the price. I raised it to $129 plus. I then added shipping and I tripled my orders. And so it goes to show, like, obviously you don't want to, like, you know, you don't want $1,000 for, a bottle of sauce, unless of course it's like you only have two and one of them were made from, you know, your tears, whatever. But, you have to, from a pricing strategy standpoint, you have to, just like you so succinctly said, cover your base and make sure that it's worth your time. Mm-hmm. You can't expect to get rich on every bottle, but you also want to ensure that people understand that this is a quality product.
That's right.
And, you know, recipes.
Well, and I thought about that a little bit. Like, I started looking at other food products and I'm like, you know, how crazy could this be? And there's a burger joint in Vegas. I think it's in the Cosmopolitan. I'm going to get this all wrong, but it's like a truffle burger wrapped in like a gold leaf
cheese or something. It's like $1,000.
Like a $900 cheeseburger.
Yep.
And this place, I looked at it, I'm like, crap, they've been in business for 5 or 6 years now. They're still going. And I thought about it for a little bit and I thought, you know, I wonder how many people have gone back and bought the burger twice. And, you know, they're selling it. And so, but how many people have gone back and bought the burger twice? I don't want anybody to buy this and say, okay, I've done it. Look at me. I've got this super expensive, crazy expensive. I've checked the box. I've tried it. It was great, whatever. I want them to enjoy it, love it, and it just be something they are willing to replenish on a regular basis. Yep. And so, that thought went into this as well. And you think about that, you know, even in fashion and cars and technology and all of that stuff, there are certainly examples of the crazy, crazy, crazy priced stuff. But how many times, certainly on a consumable version or something that's going to get wore out, how many times are they making that purchase twice? And yeah. So that was something I tried to stay away from.
No, it's super smart. And also, like, you know, you using a family recipe, I think, is awesome because recipes are really just roadmaps of love, right? Like, this is like, I am sharing a piece of you, or sorry, I'm sharing a piece of me with you. This is something that I've created, that I've honed, and now I want people to enjoy. And I think that's...
Well, that's exactly where this came from. Literally, I wanted to gift my clients and the celebrities I was working with something I made and I didn't care if they took it with them. Like it was the art of being able to say, hey, I got in my kitchen and I made this for you. This is a family recipe that's been in my family for a long time. And I want you to have this. And a handful of them took it with them and they loved it. And they asked for more and they told their friends about it. That's where this all started. So
that's a great story. So I think we've talked before, you've kind of intoned that people really buy into the story behind a product, right? Just like you're describing now. So how do you ensure that the Kinsey's foods, that story still resonates with your audience and that you build lasting relationships?
Well, so I think there's an element of that we're still trying to figure out. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this much. We try to show how much we care and we try to go above and beyond across the board. And there are certainly things that we're doing today that we probably won't be able to scale. I'll give you an example. Every order that we get, I write a handwritten note to the purchaser on the outside of the package. And so for us, like in this world of direct to consumer, you know, nobody gets an Amazon box, or very few people get an Amazon box delivered to their house where it feels like Christmas morning, where it feels like a really, really big deal, because we get a lot of them every week. And so it's just another box that you kick into the front door, and somebody's going to eventually open it in the next day or two whenever you figure out, oh, what was in these three packages that showed up today? And for us, it's when this black package with the Kinsey logo on the outside of it shows up on your front door, we want you to feel giddy. We want you to feel excited. And some of that has to do with what's inside the bottle. And our flavors are unique and interesting. They're delicious. And they make, you know, shredded crock pot chicken taste a whole lot better than it could.
Oh my God. It was amazing.
And so it's, we love that element of it, but for us, that's not enough. Like, how could they look at the bottle and say, okay, this feels and looks impressive. And so we didn't just throw another logo together and another label together, and we didn't ChatGPT it or Canva it, where, you know, you could have 15 different options and 30 seconds and pick one of them and go. Like, my team was irritated as can be with me at the number of iterations before I was willing to actually take a photo of something and put it on a website and say, this is our product. But, and I, you know, I had folks on the team that cared as much as I cared, but it was crazy. The, you know, we just needed to get open and we needed to start selling, but we were unwilling to do it till we had the entire product. I'm sitting here in my office, and next to me is around 200 bottles that I put the product in and looked at what it would look like with the label that we were leaning in on, and poured it, like absolutely went through the act of pouring it out. And what was that experience like? And before we finally found one that worked. And even then, you know, here's a little inside baseball, or a look under the hood, a new bottle's coming out at the beginning of the year that's even better and more premium, and we're spending a whole lot more money on, because even after going through 200 different iterations of what the bottle should be, how it should pour, what the product inside of it should feel like, and how it should come out, and the control that you should have with that experience. And we launched, and I still didn't feel good about it. And the team didn't feel good about it. And so we've been on this exhaustive journey since October to settle on a new bottle. And this week, after, you know, a half a year of work, this week we settled on a new bottle. And now to go into production, and it's going to take another 6 to 8 months to get the new bottles manufactured, delivered, the new packaging that's going to support it, protect it, and take care of it, in and delivered. And so we'll continue to use the same bottle until the beginning of the year. But the big Q1 of next year, we'll be launching a new bottle with an even better experience. And so for a long answer to say, you know, every aspect of the journey is intentional to us.
Yeah.
And it's, and you know, the product inside of the bottle speaks for itself. People love it. They keep buying it over and over again. But we also believe that how we make the customer feel is equally, if not more important. And so we're unwilling to skimp or sacrifice on any part of that journey as well.
No, so. I mean, I think that intentionality really shows through, and the care that you put into every step of this process, I think translates to the consumer's mind as this being a quality product and something that they want to partake in again and again and again. And, you know, I was just thinking about that. This is not supposed to be a commercial for your products, but I just had it and I loved it. And I think about, like, you know, you can eat some shredded chicken tacos, or you can have it be more of an experience where people are like, oh, okay, this is awesome. Make this again. Instead of like, thanks for dinner and I'm running my room and I'm going to watch TV or whatever my kids do. It was something that really caught everyone's attention. They're like, wow, this is really good. And I was like, yeah, I know, I can really plug in a crock pot, can't I?
I appreciate it. Well, and that's just it. Like, listen, life is crazy. And so few of this world's population has the luxury to just lay back and have these long, thoughtful meals for breakfast, yeah, for lunch, for dinner, 7 days a week. We're all working.
Yeah.
And we all have responsibility. And, you know, this week for me is the end of school year for our kids. We're going 900 miles an hour. Here's a product in your fridge or on your counter that you can rush a dinner recipe across the finish line and add this thing in the final seconds, and it takes your meal over the top. Yep. And that's what I love about it. And it takes a very typical thing, and it's like, oh, holy cow, what is this? And at the end of the day, you didn't have to spend a ton of time getting ready for dinner to still have that experience. And that was our goal.
Yeah.
And that remained our goal today.
Well, and you've reached your goal because that was my experience, right? Like, that was exactly my experience. So that's so cool. Looking ahead, what are some goals for Kinzie Foods? Like, and how do you plan to continue growing while staying true to these core values, this intentionality? It slows the process down.
It does slow the process down. Number one, we're not in a hurry. You know, I'm not trying to disrupt this industry. Barbecue sauce has existed since the beginning of time. So, like, there's nothing innovative that we've got to be the first across the finish line. So, number one, we're taking our time and we're not in this huge hurry. And so, therefore, you know, we're giving ourselves the margin to make sure that we're not making mistakes that happen through a rest experience. That's number one. Where are we going next? We're taking TikTok shop and some of this direct-to-consumer stuff really, really serious. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to improve those experiences. We talk every single week. Like, we have a highly functional, highly effective website that, but it has room to get better. And we're not satisfied. We call it a positive sense of discontent. And so we can be proud of where we're at, but we also have the margin to get better, and we're going to continue to do that. And then it shelves. And so we're being highly intentional about that as well. And so our most recent hires are leaders that are coming in to join our family that can help us excel through social selling online and through shelves. And yeah, I'm kind of taking some of the same learnings I had when I ran the entertainment company, where I hired folks that weren't necessarily experts in the field, but they fit our culture and they had the desire and they had the fight to win and they had an ounce of ability. And so that's the thing here. Like, the gentleman that's leading our TikTok strategy has just got a TikTok account for the first time 3 weeks ago. The gentleman that's leading our shelves initiative has never sold to a grocery store before in his life. And the young lady that is leading our all other social components, so Pinterest, Instagram, all of that, has never worked with a consumer packaged product before. And so, but it goes back to that 40-40 principle we talked about earlier. These are people that understand what their generation and their peers want and expect. And that's a skill set that I don't have. Yeah. And so in my mind, I am hiring the experts in those fields, even though the exact tasks that they're being charged with may not be on their resume today.
Well, I also love the fact that your mindset remains open to knowing what you know and also knowing that there's a lot you don't. And to have the people who do know those things take the reins on that stuff. Very smart. Love that. Can you share like a fun or a surprising story about how Kinzie Foods came to be or and how a simple gesture turned into this thriving business?
Yeah. The great question. You know, I think it is, and I get asked to mention names. I'm not going to mention names because these are friends of mine.
Sure.
But you know, I gave a jar of this to a guy that most people know, lives in Nashville, and expecting him to either leave it behind in the green room or give it to a roadie or give it to a drummer or whatever. And he took it home, and it was completely unexpected because I already stated what I did expect. And all of a sudden I get a phone call from him one day and it's like, hey, there's not a label on this thing. Like, where can I get this in Nashville? And I'm like, well, you can't, but I got your address. I'll ship you some more. And it was like 2 days later. And I got a similar phone call from someone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, lives in Houston, Texas. And he called me. He's like, hey man, you know, where can I find this stuff in Houston? I'm like, you can't, but I got your address. I'll send you some more. And then all of a sudden I'm getting phone calls. I think maybe the most direct way to answer your question is I got a phone call from a music manager in Nashville that said, hey, I was at so-and-so's house over the weekend and he was grilling up burgers in his backyard. and even bragging about this, and where can I get this in Nashville? And it was just like, you can't. But that was probably the moment where it was like, you know, it's one thing for them to take it. It's another thing for them to use it and want more of it. But then to hear, like, unprompted, like, no reason to do it, that they're using it, they're talking about it, they're bragging to their peers about it, and then their peers are reaching out to me to say, where can I find this? Mm-hmm. That was my, like, okay, God, I'm listening. You're nudging me, and I've been unwilling to listen, but I'm listening now. Let's work through this. And it's those blessings that continue. I remember when I sold my 1,000th order online and then my 2,000th order. And, you know, it took me X number of months to get to order number 1,000. Then it was X number of weeks to get to order number 2,000. Then X number of days to get to order number 3,000. And it was just like, all right, this is crazy. And, you know, we're still, I'm probably making it sound like we're much bigger than what we are. We're still running this thing out of a little warehouse in the Midwest, and we got some partners that are helping us, you know, fulfill everything and make it happen. But we're still, you know, if on the 1 yard line is when I sell this thing, you know, we're on the 99th yard line. We got a whole football field to get across before we score a touchdown. And so, but all the early indicators suggest that there's room for improvement, but we're certainly on the right path.
Oh, that's amazing. All right. Well, look, it's been an amazing time spending this with you. I think it's been...
Are we done already?
Well, almost. Hold on. I got one more.
But if it's going great, at least on my end, when it feels like we've only been talking for 2 or 3 minutes.
I know. Right. Like I got, this has been a great trip for me. I've just been soaking all this in. I loved all this. This is great. All right. So Walter, lastly, what is a key message or a piece of advice about embracing failure or hurdles and finding a way forward that you would like to leave our listeners with? What is your gift to them?
Yeah, listen, everybody's battling their own journeys. Everybody's has battle on their own journeys, for sure. I may not have the trick or tool in my toolbox to help you fix whatever you're dealing with or going through, but I will tell you this. I have faced, as we all have, some really, really dark days. Sure. I have been in, unfortunately, countless situations. In some cases, I'm still in them, where it feels like there's absolutely no way I'm going to be able to get over this mountain. Mm. And, but if there's anything that is true or that I've learned in my 42 years of going around this sun, it's that the dark days don't last. And you can summit the mountain and you can get over it. And the bad stuff will get behind you. You can't give up. And so I may not have the exact answer of how any of you can fight the battles that you're dealing with, but I can tell you to keep fighting because you will win. And who knows what that journey looks like? Who knows how long that journey is? But keep fighting because you're going to win.
That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for that. For people who want to learn more about Kinsey Foods or get a hold of you, what are the best ways?
Yeah, kinseyfoods.com or at Kinsey Foods. Every single social media platform, it's at Kinsey Foods.
And so
know how to spell the name. Yep. There's a million different ways to spell Kinsey. So KINZIE foods.com or at Kinsey Foods awesome, on any of the social media handles. And we run little specials from time to time. My birthday was last week. We ran a 1 day free shipping. And so there's always little specials, little things that we're doing. So just interact with us and we'll make it worth your time.
Happy birthday. And, dude, as always, time goes way too fast whenever we connect. So I'm thankful for you sharing some time with us today. I know that the audience has greatly appreciated it. And, look, I'm just so happy for your success. I can't wait to see more. I can't wait to see more of your product in my cupboard because I'm out. So I'm going to buy some more and, you know, hats off to you again. Thank you for being so awesome. And, you know, you deserve all the success you've had and I wish you so much more.
Thank you so much. It has been just such a joy becoming friends with you. I met you in December and I feel like I've known you my whole life. And you have been nothing but incredibly grace, showed me incredible grace and and gave me that kind of motivation to keep fighting and keep going, and seeing your positive energy has been very uplifting to me. So I really, really appreciate it. It's a true honor to know you.
Oh, geez. All right, fine. Give me your address. I'll send you the check. All right. Thank you so much, Walter. It's been a true honor.
Thank you. Take care.
And that's a wrap, folks. Like what you heard, want to support the show? Please follow our page on LinkedIn and Facebook. Visit us on YouTube, and please like and rate us on all of your favorite podcast streaming services. You can also see exclusive content, subscribe for free to our weekly blog, support our sponsors, and soon buy our merchandise at www.bravingbusiness.com. Thanks for being a part of our production, and we'll see you next time on the Braving Business Podcast.